Chapter 63. Rope vibrated leisurely to the blow, like the long string of a pendulum starting from a wrist. But no swinging motion was imparted to the body of Senor Hirsch, the well-known eyed merchant on the coast. With a convulsive effort of the twisted arms it leaped up a few inches, curling upon itself like a fish on the end of a line. Senor Hirsch's head was flung back on his straining throat, his chin trembled. For a moment the rattle of his chattering teeth pervaded the vast, shadowy room, where the candles made a patch of light round the two flames burning side by side. And as Satillo, staying his raised hand, waited for him to speak, with the sudden flash of a grin, and a straining forward of the wrenched shoulders, he spat violently into his face. The uplifted whip fell, and the colonel sprang back with a low cry of dismay, as if aspersed by a jet of deadly venom. Quick as thought he snatched up his revolver, and fired twice. The report and the concussion of the shots seemed to throw him at once from ungovernable rage into idiotic stupor. He stood with drooping jaw and stony eyes. What had he done, Sangre de Dios? What had he done? He was basely appalled at his impulsive act, sealing forever these lips from which so much was to be extorted. What could he say? How could he explain? Ideas of headlong flight somewhere, anywhere, passed through his mind. Even the craven and absurd notion of hiding under the table occurred to his cowardice. It was too late. His officers had rushed in tumultuously, in a great clatter of scabbards, clamoring, with astonishment and wonder. But since they did not immediately proceed to plunge their swords into his breast, the brazen side of his character asserted itself. Passing the sleeve of his uniform over his face he pulled himself together, his truculent glance turned slowly here and there, checked the noise where it fell, and the stiff body of the late Senor Hirsch, merchant, after swaying imperceptibly, made a half-turn, and came to a rest in the midst of odd murmurs and uneasy shuffling. A voice remarked loudly, "Behold a man who will never speak again." And another, from the back row of faces, timid and pressing, cried out, "Why did you kill him, my colonel?" "Because he has confessed everything," answered Satillo, with the hardihood of desperation. He felt himself cornered. He brazened it out on the strength of his reputation with very fair success. His hearers thought him very capable of such an act. They were disposed to believe his flattering tale. There is no credulity so eager and blind as the credulity of covetousness, which, in its universal extent, measures the moral misery and the intellectual destitution of mankind. Ah! He had confessed everything, this fractious Jew, this bribon. Good. Then he was no longer wanted. A sudden dense guffaw was heard from the senior captain, a big-headed man, with little round eyes and monstrously fat cheeks which never moved. The old major, tall and fantastically ragged like a scarecrow, walked round the body of the late Senor Hirsch, muttering to himself with ineffable complacency that like this there was no need to guard against any future treacheries of that scoundrel. The others stared, shifting from foot to foot, and whispering short remarks to each other. Satillo buckled on his sword and gave curt, peremptory orders to hasten the retirement decided upon in the afternoon. Sinister, impressive, his sombrero pulled right down upon his eyebrows, he marched first through the door in such disorder of mind that he forgot utterly to provide for Dr. Monaghan's possible return. As the officers trooped out after him, one or two looked back hastily at the late Senor Hirsch, merchant from Esmeralda, left swinging rigidly at rest, alone with the two burning candles. In the emptiness of the room the burly shadow of head and shoulders on the wall had an air of life. Below, the troops fell in silently and moved off by companies without drum or trumpet. The old scarecrow major commanded the rearguard. But the party he left behind with orders to fire the custom house and burn the carcass of the treacherous Jew, where it hung, failed somehow in their haste to set the staircase properly alight. The body of the late Senior Hirsch dwelt alone for a time in the dismal solitude of the unfinished building, resounding weirdly with sudden slams and clicks of doors and latches, with rustling scurries of torn papers, and the tremulous sighs that at each gust of wind passed under the high roof. The light of the two candles burning before the perpendicular and breathless immobility of the late Senior Hirsch threw a gleam afar over land and water, like a signal in the night. He remained to startle Nostromo by his presence, and to puzzle Dr. Monaghan by the mystery of his atrocious end. But why shot? The doctor again asked himself, audibly. This time he was answered by a dry laugh from Nostromo. You seem much concerned at a very natural thing, Senior Doctor. I wonder why? It is very likely that before long we shall all get shot one after another, if not by Sotillo, then by Pedrito, or Fuentes, or Camacho. And we may even get the Estropade too, or worse Queen Sabe. With your pretty tale of the silver you put into Sotillo's head. It was in his head already, the doctor protested. Only, yes. And you only nailed it there, so that the devil himself, that is precisely what I meant to do. Caught up the doctor. That is what you meant to do. Bueno. It is as I say. You are a dangerous man. Their voices, which without rising, had been growing quarrelsome, ceased suddenly. The late Senior Hirsch, erect and shadowy against the stars, seemed to be waiting attentive, in impartial silence. But Dr. Monaghan had no mind to quarrel with Nostromo. At this supremely critical point of Sulaco's fortunes it was borne upon him at last that this man was really indispensable, more indispensable than ever the infatuation of Captain Mitchell, his proud discoverer, could conceive. Far beyond what Deckett's best dry raillery about why illustrious friend, the unique Capitus de Cargadores, had ever intended. The fellow was unique. He was not one in a thousand. He was absolutely the only one. The doctor surrendered. There was something in the genius of that genie seaman which dominated the destinies of great enterprises, and of many people, the fortunes of Charles Gould, the fate of an admirable woman. At this last thought the doctor had to clear his throat, before he could speak. In a completely changed tone he pointed out to the Capitus that, to begin with, he personally ran no great risk. As far as everybody knew he was dead. It was an enormous advantage. He had only to keep out of sight in the Casa Viola, where the old Garibaldino was known to be alone with his dead wife. The servants had all run away. No one would think of searching for him there, or anywhere else on earth, for that matter. That would be very true, Nostromo spoke up, bitterly, if I had not met you. For a time the doctor kept silent. Do you mean to say that you think I may give you away? He asked in an unsteady voice. Why? Why should I do that? What do I know? Why not? To gain a day perhaps. It would take Sotillo a day to give me the Estropade, and try some other things perhaps, before he puts a bullet through my heart as he did to that poor wretch here. Why not? The doctor swallowed with difficulty. His throat had gone dry in a moment. It was not from indignation. The doctor, pathetically enough, believed that he had forfeited the right to be indignant with anyone for anything. It was simple dread. Had the fellow heard his story by some chance? If so, there was an end of his usefulness in that direction. The indispensable man escaped his influence because of that indelible blot which made him fit for dirty work. A feeling as of sickness came upon the doctor. He would have given anything to know, but he dared not clear up the point. The fanaticism of his devotion, fed on the sense of his abasement, hardened his heart in sadness and scorn. Why not, indeed, he re-echoed, sardonically. And the safe thing for you is to kill me on the spot. I would defend myself. But you may just as well know I am going about unarmed. Poor Dios, said the Capitus, passionately. You fine people are all alike. All dangerous. All betrayers of the poor who are your dogs. You do not understand, began the doctor, slowly. I understand you all. cry to the other with a violent movement, a shadowy to the doctor's eyes as the persistent immobility of the late Senior Hirsch. A poor man amongst you has got to look after himself. I say that you do not care for those that serve you. Look at me. After all these years, suddenly, here I find myself like one of these curs that bark outside the walls without a kennel or a dry bone for my teeth. Caramba. But he relented with a contemptuous fairness. Of course, he went on, quietly, I do not suppose that you would hasten to give me up to Satillo, for example. It is not that. It is that I am nothing. Suddenly he swung his arm downwards. And nothing to anyone, he repeated. The doctor breathed freely. Listen, Capitus, he said, stretching out his arm almost affectionately towards Nostromo's shoulder. I am going to tell you a very simple thing. You are safe, because you are needed. I would not give you away for any conceivable reason, because I want you. In the darkness, Tromo bit his lip. He had heard enough of that. He knew what that meant. No more of that for him. But he had to look after himself now, he thought. And he thought, too, that it would not be prudent to part in anger from his companion. The doctor, admitted to be a great healer, had, amongst the populace of Sulaco, the reputation of being an evil sort of man. It was based solidly on his personal appearance, which was strange, and on his rough ironic manner proofs visible, sensible, and incontrovertible of the doctor's malevolent disposition. And Nostromo was of the people, so he only grunted incredulously. You, to speak plainly, are the only man, the doctor pursued. It is in your power to save this town and... everybody from the destructive rapacity of men who know, Senior, said Nostromo, sullenly. It is not in my power to get the treasure back for you to give up to Satillo, or Pedrito, or Gamacho. What do I know? Nobody expects the impossible, was the answer. You have said it yourself, nobody, muttered Nostromo, in a gloomy, threatening tone. But Dr. Monaghan, full of hope, disregarded the enigmatic words and the threatening tone. To their eyes, accustomed to obscurity, the late Senior Hirsch, growing more distinct, seemed to have come nearer. And the doctor lowered his voice in exposing his scheme, as though afraid of being overheard. He was taking the indispensable man into his fullest confidence. Its implied flattery and suggestion of great risks came with a familiar sound to the Capitus. His mind, floating in irresolution and discontent, recognized it with bitterness. He understood well that the doctor was anxious to save the Santome mine from annihilation. He would be nothing without it. It was his interest. Just as it had been the interest of Senior Decad, of the Blancos, and of the Europeans, to get his cargoers on their side. His thought became arrested upon Decad. What would happen to him? Nostromo's prolonged silence made the doctor uneasy. He pointed out, quite unnecessarily, that though for the present he was safe, he could not live concealed forever. The choice was between accepting the mission to Berrios, with all its dangers and difficulties, and leaving Sulaco by stealth, ingloriously, in poverty. None of your friends could reward you and protect you just now, Capitus. Not even Don Carlos himself. I would have none of your protection, and none of your rewards. I only wish I could trust your courage and your sense. When I return in triumph, as you say, with Berrios, I may find you all destroyed. You have the knife at your throat now. It was the doctor's turn to remain silent in the contemplation of horrible contingencies. Well, we would trust your courage and your sense. And you, too, have a knife at your throat. Ah! And whom am I to thank for that? What are your politics and your minds to me, your silver, and your constitutions, your Don Carlos this, and Don Jose, that, I don't know, burst out the exasperated doctor. Here are innocent people in danger whose little finger is worth more than you or I and all the Ribierists together. I don't know. You should have asked yourself before you allowed Decad to lead you into all this. It was your place to think like a man. But if you did not think then, try to act like a man now. Did you imagine Deckard cared very much for what would happen to you? No more than you care for what will happen to me, muttered the other. No, I care for what will happen to you as little as I care for what will happen to myself. And all this, because you are such a devoted Ribeirist? Nostromo said in an incredulous tone. All this because I am such a devoted Ribeirist, repeated Dr. Monaghan, grimly. Again Nostromo, gazing abstractedly at the body of the late Senor Hirsch, remained silent, thinking that the doctor was a dangerous person in more than one sense. It was impossible to trust him. Do you speak in the name of Don Carlos? He asked at last. Yes, I do, the doctor said, loudly, without hesitation. He must come forward now. He must, he added in a mutter, which Nostromo did not catch. What did you say, Senor? The doctor started. I say, that you must be true to yourself, Capitus. It would be worse than folly to fail now. True to myself, repeated Nostromo. How do you know that I would not be true to myself, if I told you to go to the devil with your propositions? I do not know. Maybe you would, the doctor said, with a roughness of tone intended to hide the sinking of his heart, and the faltering of his voice. All I know is, that you had better get away from here. Some of Satillo's men may turn up here looking for me. He slipped off the table, listening intently. The capitalist who stood up. Suppose I went to Cata, what would you do meantime, he asked. I would go to Satillo directly you had left in the way I am. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.